advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny things.
All right, welcome to the Sofa King Podcast. We had some technical difficulties. We just lost 20 minutes of audio. It's the first time, 250 episodes, we literally lost audio. So
I can sum it up real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. Banana phone.
Mm-hmm.
Ha ha ha.
El Yucateco. Brent burned his butthole.
Snoop Dogg. Don't talk about him in prison.
Oh, that was a good story too.
Prison. Fuck, damn. You can tack that. That's Dave audio. You can tack that on.
Nope.
Prison.
Patreon. I'll stick it on Patreon.
Prison whiskey.
How damn, do all that happened. That didn't happen.
I forgot it all.
It's funny. I forgot all that already, but damn.
Literally so, 2 seconds ago, we just lost this audio.
So we lost, a whole audio track just disappeared in the middle of it. So it was like Brad was a ghost and you could only hear him in the background.
Yep. So
that's in summary. So just pretend that we just spent 15 minutes saying all that. So those of you who don't like the opening where we talk about a lot of stuff, this is your episode for you.
We got
our fix.
Yeah.
We had our...
They all left us a 1-star and quit listening.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. A new guy's going to be like, this is right on. He's going to be real disappointed next round.
Right.
He'll be happy about this one. I pretty much got right to it. 2 minutes.
So, Dave, wow, look at that.
What do you got on William Randolph Hearst?
So William Randolph Hearst is our topic for the day. And as I said in the missing 20 minutes, and it's worth repeating because it's kind of creepy, when we looked into him, so William Randolph Hearst, for those of you who don't really know who he was a huge... media magnate, the first ever such sort of information owner in America. Any newspaper that happened in like 1900 to 1920, 1940, he probably fucking owned. At
I feel
his
like
height,
we talked about this.
We did. At his height, he owned 1 in 4 newspapers through the entire country.
His first paper was 1887, actually. So, So even in the 1800s, he was already doing shit.
He was already taken. That was in San Francisco, et cetera. So huge, huge impact on media. Anyone who's been to Hearst Castle, we'll talk about Hearst Castle, et cetera. But anybody with this much power and anybody with this much clout, if you look at anything. If you just go to fucking biography.com, it's going to be a bunch of facts. And somewhere in the middle, there's going to be several paragraphs about this scandal and that scandal and this other fucked up thing they did. And there really just isn't on Hearst. And it kind of made me paranoid about information control because his company is still massive. Yeah. They still own like 340 magazines worldwide. They own something like 46 newspapers, a bunch of cable networks. Like they're still a major information broker and their family is still the king of information. And I'm like, is that why we can't find information on this fucking guy?
I think I said it before, but winners write history.
Right. Yeah. No.
And Hearst is a winner.
A fucking winner.
Yeah. Like, I think it just said that.
And normally with someone of this status too, you have like PBS did a biography and Biography did a biography and Nat Geo did something on him. And there's so little out there. Like literally the only documentary that I could find was Pulitzer versus Hearst. 47 minutes Nat Geo.
Right.
Otherwise, it was like bullshit people made up on YouTube that were just like kid kind projects of, and just little. There's not a real documentary out there.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because, like you said, somebody of this high caliber and somebody who's made such an impact on the world as it is, like there's nothing on them. Like
And again, just speaking from podcast research we've done, everybody that we bump into, you end up in the middle of their bio pages starting to read some fucking thing. And there's just so much. One of the biggest areas to get knowledge from Hearst is going to be the Hearst Castle website.
Right.
And it's the most whitewashed,
butt kiss,
everything that I ran into that was negative wasn't published there.
The Nat Geo thing I watched about Pulitzer. And then you can watch Citizen Kane, which is Orson Welles' like depiction of based right. loosely based off. Yeah. And then there's RKO 281. Is that what it is? RKO 280.
Yeah.
I can't remember the number. Yeah. And I watched both those in film class actually with that teacher that was like, right. She was literally a South Park character and it fucking drove me crazy, but I watched both those. Mm-hmm. So I have seen those, but they're not fresh in my memory. A lot of it started to come back as we did this research, luckily, because like I said, it was very troublesome. That one documentary that was narrated by William H. Macy is like fucking pulled from existence. And it's a huge documentary, but it wasn't received well because it seemed like it was written in a good light. So there was a lot of criticism to say that it was kind of, like you said, like whitewashed. It was obviously written to benefit him. And I didn't get to watch it because I can't fucking find it.
I finally, having a hard time, he notoriously had a mistress who he lived with. We'll get there and get to her. But I read one article and like the title was something dramatic, like, you know, the real truth behind Hearst's mistress. And I'm like, okay, finally some, you know, fucking dirt. I forget what it was. It was a fairly reputable source. And I look at it and it's literally just a bunch of information about this woman.
Right.
Like it doesn't even talk about Hearst in any meaningful way. I was just like, fuck. Like
well, it was the truth, like, about her.
Yeah.
I told you about her.
Right. Exactly. And it was just like, so anyway, it was kind of strange looking into Hearst because I felt like there should be a lot more information than what we could find. And it was a little bit creepy finding all the hollow spots in his bio where there should have been a lot more juiciness and it just wasn't fucking showing up. It was kind of strange. But the other thing that we said in the missing bit was something that I did want to convey, which is what I once I started looking into Hearst and I found the facts about him, I thought he was important for both a good thing and a bad thing that happened with journalism. The first thing was he paid a lot of money in order to get the story. So the idea of sending out field reporters, the idea of doing a lot of hard-hitting reporting, really Hearst was one of the main people behind that. Because A, he was always trying to crush the competition with a bigger scoop and a better story. And B, he didn't care if he lost money from one of his ventures as long, you know, from the news, as long as it kept
producing news. It was an overall venture.
Yeah, he would send reporters on a boat to Cuba during crazy shit, Spanish-American War. He went and talked to Hitler.
Gangster.
All kinds of shit.
And up until very recently, until like corporate mergers and stuff starting in the 80s and 90s, that was still the way news operations ran. If you were a newspaper, you didn't mind taking a loss as long as you served the public. If you were CBS News, NBC News, you didn't mind, like the station, NBC, didn't care if the nightly news cost them money instead of made it because that was their responsibility. Now that's kind of out the window. If you're not selling Viagra and whatever, then the fucking news doesn't matter. But so it was, I mean, it really set the stage and he kind of had that impact. The other thing was, though, the idea that right now the media is owned by 3, 4, 5 companies worldwide, and there's just a conglomeration of information mongers.
Yeah.
Everybody from Rupert Murdoch, all these people that just like own the news. Like he was the beginning of that. Yeah, he could sway public policy. He could influence elections. He could get us to go to war or get us not to go to war because he literally had
political assassination.
Well, yeah. I found that people they regarded him as the devil because he literally came up with the screams and scandals type, you know, articles and whatnot, right, you know, so all of the, any type of bloodshed, any type of bullshit, conspiracy stuff.
He kind of created all that.
Yeah. And so that's the way, you know, you have these things like the stupid ass, I don't know what they are, the Globe and stuff like that. You know, these magazines that come up with fucking Angelina Jolie's pregnant with fucking octuplets. You know, like, it's like they skew fact and fiction.
Right.
And he kind of,
he did that a lot in his, he just wanted to sell papers.
Yeah. And he did, you know, people were into it.
But the problem with him, and we'll get into this, is like his power was so vast that he would often make up a story and thereby make the story real. like once he invested people and spread the story through all of his newspapers, it suddenly became a truth.
Right.
Even like, I mean, he could define the truth to his entire generation in ways that no one else had done up until then.
And his primary, like his antagonist was Joseph Pulitzer of the Pulitzer Prize. Yeah. And that was like the primary like news mongol at the time.
Yeah.
That was kind of his idol, his goal.
But he was just in New York.
Like, but that guy, like he had already made it to where William Hearst wants to be.
Right.
And I guess he had like signs around his office that were like accuracy, 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 because there was still integrity at that point.
Right.
But as we'll get to,
that goes
Hearst creates competition and it's like, it's fucking like sink or swim kind of thing where he has to be like, oh God, I have to sensationalize something or I can't compete.
Right.
Exactly. Well, and it's a slippery slope. You start embellishing a story.
Yeah.
And then you start creating things, your own shit
with no grounds for anything, with no proof of anything. You start speculating and saying those things.
And you know what I've noticed though, like a lot of local papers, I mean, our paper is like that, like very much. They come up with like a story and they're reading it and you're like, they don't know anything about what's going on and they're writing the story.
Yeah, I didn't expose myself at that McDonald's and they made it sound like it. I was just adjusting my belt by the planter.
Well,
and
I wasn't going to mention
those kids were like 30 feet away. It wasn't even a fucking
that was
deal.
A school.
Yeah. Your penis was in the Shamrock Shake.
Yeah.
I wasn't wearing underwear that day. It was of my belt. My belt was loose. I let my belt out.
In front of a school.
I was tightening my belt.
Wait a minute. You let like your belt else. Out. You were tightening your belt.
It was loose. The buckle's weird. It's one of those weird military belts. It's fucking weird.
How'd your dick get green?
That was earlier. Yeah. It's a treatment. I had a rash.
It was all the radium. Yeah. So Hearst's childhood. And I guess I did know this, but I completely forgot. I was, have you guys, by the way, side note, have you guys been to Hearst Castle?
I've wanted to go and I've had the opportunity to go, but I didn't want to walk that much.
It's a lot of opportunities.
I've been twice. I went in like the seventh grade as part of some school thing.
Cause a lot of stuff that I researched was backed up. Cause the people who give you the tour of like, those are the people we should have fucking talked to. Cause they did know the dirt about Hearst. Like they know a lot
they
of
probably
shit.
Don't give it up though. I don't know.
They gave up some fucking
now, right?
Shit. Like,
that's state funded or
but
something.
The people who do the tours are historians, like retired historians, et cetera. But they know a lot of shit about Hearst. The people who are giving the tours.
I saw a cool video where one of the employees like went buck wild and fucking jumped in the pool and swam and like, just like, fuck this. He was like up on this little balcony thing. They're like, get down, like yelling. And he just jumps
the
in
the outdoor pool or the indoor
pool? The indoor pool.
Okay.
Takes his shirt off and shit. I think that connects. You can swim out to that thing.
I don't think so.
That's
I think
sure? separate. No? Yeah.
But
I know
that what all a grotto
that shit,
is.
That shit's all gold leaf on the bottom of the
it's
pool.
Crazy.
It's really actually gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he's swimming around, taking his clothes off in the fucking pool.
Yeah.
The security's just like shaking their head like this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Because what do you do? As long as he can wade fucking tread water out there, you can't get him.
Right.
You got to jump in and wrestle some guy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've wanted to go. I've drove past it many times, you know, going up that way.
It's cool. We'll get there when we talk more about it.
How much trouble do you think you get in for jumping in that pool?
Well, he got fired, apparently.
I mean, you'd probably
I'm
get
saying
removed.
Regular me or you. Like,
you'd probably get kicked out and banned. I don't know.
They'd ban you. I'd say they ban you.
So you take the tour, jump in, fuck it, I'm never going again.
Right.
Yeah. We get pictures and put it on the website.
Yeah, Sophie King shirts, all three of us, we're doing this.
I think it's cool, though. They have zebras on the ground.
Yeah,
like, there's
do.
A bunch of exotic animals.
Well, even
animals,
if you're just driving around, because it's a huge plot of land, the area that is what the Hearst
ran. It's like 240 from. Acres or something.
Yeah,
like
I was going to say it's 250.
240.
Yeah, 250 acres, whatever
it's
it is.
More
240
than that.
Hectare.
Acres.
I don't know. I always
it's
hear
a hectarion.
What's what hectare?
Hectare.
That's fluid ounce acres. Hectares.
Fluid ounce acres.
That's if you have to pour 12 ounce Pepsi on the ground.
67 billion hectares.
It was 168,000 acres.
Oh, shit.
What?
We were a little off. We were just...
He inherited...
Just a touch off.
He inherited, when his mom died, 168,000 acres.
That's holy in San fuck. Simeon.
In San Simeon. And he acquired more land before he built the castle there, so it got up to 250,000 acres.
So we're at not 250 acres.
It's 250,000
acres.
I was talking
holy
about fluid
shit.
Ounces. I was off. So, I was just, my conversion was off.
So when you're, I
and,
mean,
and
you're
who
driving.
Took that over? The state?
Well, they took no. They basically
he ran out of money.
They let the family. It's kind of weird, from what I understand. The family still owns the castle, But they
let
also,
them do tourism there.
But they also turned it into a state park and a historical monument, because from what I know, the because if you go like where Hearst Castle is not too far away, there's like a little deli and like a liquor store, like a winery, like the Hearst Winery that sells wine and stuff. It's not a liquor store. It's
there's
a store.
There's a restaurant called Moon Glorious, and I love it.
Is that where, is it right there?
Yeah, the Moon Glorious.
But anyway, and there's like a, the whole area where real? there's
it's
like
not called that. It's Moon something.
But there's a couple of houses, like really nice houses that are where just like fenced off. You can't get there right where this deli is and all this stuff. And that's still Hearst houses.
Right.
And the family will stay there. And apparently like after hours, when the place isn't open, they'll have parties. They'll go swim in the fucking grotto. Like the family still has full access to that castle.
Right.
Well, if it's
and
theirs,
they can go to the liquor store and get a Snickers at like 2 a.m. if they want. They got special privileges. Yeah, they got a key to the back door. Yeah.
So, but anyway, all of this, like a lot of the facts that I forgot about this, but it's not like he was a self-made person.
Nah.
His parents were fucking loaded. His mom came from a really wealthy family. His father was a multimillionaire that owned gold mines, and
his dad was a minor 49er. So he took off looking for gold and found the largest silver vein, like to history or some shit. And then invested and bought land and whatnot. And that's where their fortune came from.
And I didn't know he actually talked to an architect, and they actually designed the San Simeon coast, like the actual San Simeon.
He worked with
60,000 acres. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was her name?
I forget her name.
Julia Morgan.
Yeah. She, and it's kind of a trip that
I didn't know that.
Like she was the first architect to get a license in the state of California, first female architect to get a license in the state of California. I mean, we're talking like the 1917 or something. Yeah. Like there were not female architects.
She couldn't vote, but she could design houses.
Right, exactly.
She couldn't even read. She could just draw.
I mean, she pretty much for her entire career had one job, right, and that was Hearst Castle.
Well, that no. She didn't do Hearst Castle. She built the coast.
No, she did all line. Of it. She did all of it.
She did the castle
well.
Too? Yeah. Yep. That's insane. Like
that is an accomplishment with most women,
like,
at that
you didn't
time
build a house.
Radioactive paintbrushes. She was designing the castle.
Yeah. And the coastline. Like I'm more impressed. The castle's one thing. Like I'm impressed she like developed a fucking town.
And there's their own pier. There's the Hearst Pier. Yeah. It's a great pier. I go like every time I go there in the summer, I walk up the Hearst Pier and kind of sit there. But and I think a lot of it came from his mom. Like I think his mom made him appreciate powerful women. She was the first woman to ever graduate from UC Berkeley. Like she was kind of a statistical outlier as well because she had so much wealth and so forth. And she actually took him when he was young, took him on a tour of Europe for like a year and a half. And that was where he fell in love with castles and royalty and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but something happened at one point in time where he funded a blimp around the world, but conditional that this female journalist went along, and then she became the first female to go around the world.
Oh, that's crazy.
Like by air. So maybe that has something to be said for that too.
So he ends up growing up already wealthy. He went to Harvard.
Oh, there was something funny about that
shit. Yeah, there's a lot. He was the editor for the Harvard Lampoon. He did a bunch of bullshit at college. He got kicked out of Harvard because he was too fucking rowdy.
He had beer parties, and he was a member of some weird shit. Did you see that?
He had massive beer parties in Harvard Square.
He was a member
like,
of
outdoor,
the,
like...
Of the Hasty Pudding Theatricals. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And he would send...
Theatricals.
Yeah, he would put pudding in chamber pots and send it to his professors. And at the bottom of the chamber pot, the professors' faces were painted.
Yeah. Well, strangely enough, Bill Cosby was a part of the same.
Yes. Do it. I know you got it, Dave.
Cosby. Pudding. That's my Cosby.
I think he waited. Like we were waiting. Like, come on, do it, David. It's gonna ruin the whole fucking pudding pop theatrical group.
I'm gonna practice my pudding pop outside of this and come back.
So
come back strong.
He gets kicked out of Harvard, but while he was at Harvard and while he was on the East Coast, he actually met Pulitzer and kind of worked under him for a little bit. Like he learned.
Yeah,
he learned.
He wanted to learn
through
stuff from
Pulitzer.
Him.
It was a real Tesla Edison thing.
Yeah, it was. So he ends up being inspired. I'm sure he knew him because of his dad, all this stuff. And then once he got kicked out of Harvard, his dad, to show what kind of a baller his dad was, his dad already owned the San Francisco Examiner, and he bought it so he could sway elections to keep being elected as a senator.
I saw that he received it as a gambling debt in payment. It says... And he took over occupation in 1887. He took over management of the newspaper, the San Francisco Examiner, which his father received in 1880 as payment for a gambling debt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But I know the things that I read, though, said that he used the newspaper a lot to push his political agenda and get reelected, which, like father, like son.
Did Mark Twain work there or some shit? Did I see that right?
Mark Twain.
I was like, what the fuck? Mark Twain?
No, he hired like some of the best writers in the nation. As soon as he got hired, as soon as Hearst got hired as editor.
Mark Twain said the N-word.
He did.
He made me uncomfortable.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. It was a character's name.
Yeah.
What, a lot?
Yeah.
N-word Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna say it, Dave. Don't look at me,
Tom.
Don't look at me like that.
Anyway,
don't persecute me with those eyes.
Only one of my eyes did. The other one wasn't judging you.
Yeah, your blue eye.
Yeah.
You know, Dave has one brown eye.
He looks like
an
Australian Shepherd.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
An orange Australian Shepherd.
Yeah.
Simpson Shepherd.
Yeah. A Simpson Shepherd.
We call him David Bowie Moon.
I can't get the picture of you with the banana phone out of my head. The fucking picture with the glasses. Yeah,
what
and the
is
fucking,
that picture
the
from?
Phone.
It's very monkeyish. It's like Planet of the Apes. Hey, I'm just saying.
And everybody knows monkeys don't eat bananas.
Yeah, so what's
that's
going on there?
Lie.
Tyler Mott.
But I can't get every time I look at you, I see the fucking.
He only uses that picture
image.
Of you now. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Flying a helicopter.
I like it. I'm not saying anything bad about it.
Oh, you guys remember that really funny we did about a bit we did about the banana phone at the beginning of this episode? They got lost.
Yeah.
That
was
good. I did. Great.
Yeah. I already ate my banana phone. Look at how fast this turned black.
Yeah.
We're actually talking about jerking off of the banana peel.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, we did.
You know what?
Lost.
Hey, never fucked a black banana.
Once you'll never go back.
Yeah. Once you go black, you don't go back.
Yeah. It works for all skin tones.
Yeah.
It starts out white guy.
It starts out Asian.
There you go.
Starts out Asian. It's green. It's green.
Yes. I guess
Brent
Asian.
From the Shamrock Shake.
Starts out Brent. Goes Asian, turns black.
Yeah, we already covered
that. Wow, this is good shit. Man, versatile.
So
versatile fucking machine.
Yeah, but he hires, juicy. As soon as he gets it, he hires Mark Twain, Ambrose Bierce, Jack London, like some of the best writers in America at the time to contribute to the San Francisco Examiner. And this is where he really begins his idea of like speculation and half truths in the media because he wants to dominate the San Francisco mediascape. And everybody wants to buy this newspaper with Mark Twain writing in it, a bunch of like sensational bullshit. It just instantly sells.
And money's no object. Like he can hire these people.
Right.
Where Pulitzer doesn't have that behind him. He literally has to operate off business, like profit, loss, figure this shit out. And Hearst can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Right.
He can take whatever risk he needs to do, and that's not a very fair war. He's like, I got unlimited lives and bullets.
From one of the things I read, it said that about one quarter of the page space in the paper was devoted to crime stories because that's what sold.
Yeah.
And then it also included investigative reports on government corruption and negligence by public institutions because that also sold. So that was, again, it was that idea of both using the media as a way of sensationalism, which is shitty, and using the media to get investigative journalism, which is legit. He was kind of dabbling in.
And
both.
When he takes his paper over, like I saw a documentary, they showed like what it looked like. It was like all the same font, super bland columns, like no real headers.
Yeah.
Like maybe it was slightly larger typeface for what the subject matter was of that particular column, but it was just like blah. And he kind of adopted the Pulitzer thing and said, oh, these sensational headlines, and kind of spiced it up and did the whole comic strip.
Right.
Completely reinvented it, came in and fired management, cleaned house, and fucking just took over.
And even now, like if you get a Sunday paper, like if you get any paper and you see like the King Syndicate, which is like the name that the comic strips come in, like most of the comic strips that you, even to this day, if you pick up like the Sunday paper and it's the color Sunday comics and it always says King Syndicate,
right?
That's him. Like he invented the King Syndicate as a way to sell comics to newspapers.
Yeah, he doubled in the first year of taking over that paper. He doubled the circulation.
Yeah.
Like he went from a failing paper that wasn't turning a profit to like number one in whatever wherever they were at.
Right. And that was when he decides, I'm going to get a paper in New York because he wants to get other large markets and he wants to start spreading and buying more papers.
Yeah.
And It's just fucking ballsy. It's like the best newspaper guy in the nation is Pulitzer, and he dominates New York.
Right.
And Hearst could have picked Chicago. He could have picked Los Angeles. Like, he could have picked any major city, and he's like, fuck it, I'm going straight for that.
Well, he knows he has a recipe for success, and he knows he has unlimited resources. So he says, if I did it here, it's repeatable there. It's a franchise.
Right.
Like, I can repeat this recipe here, and I'll be successful, especially when I have the money behind it. There's nothing to stop
it.
Well,
it's still a gamble.
And if I can kick, I can kick Pulitzer's ass, everybody's gonna know I can kick their ass too.
Yeah, and once he beats out Pulitzer, it's over. Like that's
game
the
over. Like
thing,
when I move into your town, just sell me your shit because you're not gonna win. Pulitzer didn't. But so he
I
gets
just
want
to point out we were already here at the 20 minute mark.
Yeah, this is right where we were when we lost.
I just want to point that out.
Other shit. Yeah. So with the success of the Examiner, he ends up going into New York and he buys the New York Morning Journal, which Pulitzer previously owned. He buys this in 1895, and he starts to basically go to war with Pulitzer over the circulations, trying to dominate the New York market.
He publishes twice the amount of pages, 16 pages at 1 cent, when Pulitzer is doing 8 pages at 2 cents.
Yeah, so he dropped it to a cent, and then Pulitzer had to adapt and drop his to a cent. Because otherwise he can't compete. No one's going to fucking buy it.
He starts operating at a loss, basically, for competition.
Right. He starts to hire all of the best people from Pulitzer, the best typesetters, the best writers, the best artists, and get by like doubling their fucking salary, giving them benefits.
A lot of it, though, a lot of that is there's a misconception that it was all throwing money at a lot of them. A lot of them came over on their own free will because he said, hey, I'm going to give you your own column. You know, and they were just like, well, I'm not going to get that here. I've been here forever. And I guess kind of the attitude and the atmosphere at Tchotchke's with all the flair over at the other place, that was the line somebody got, but the atmosphere and the attitude of Pulitzer was a lot different. I guess that Hearst was like pretty cool dude. Like he was relaxed. Like he said, he let people drink and be crazy. As long as they were of value, they could have whatever thoughts and attitude and personalities that they wanted. But
he was like the cool.com startup guy.
Yeah. He was like Jobs. Yeah. Like the Steve Jobs, I guess, super mild mannered, really relaxed, super cool. And so some people just came over, not necessarily because of the pay, although he probably did pay more, but just because they were tired of being stuck at whatever they were doing at the other paper.
Right. So one of the things that this leads to, which again, like this was the main part where I was like, how come I'm having so much fucking difficulty finding more information about this? Because this part is pretty fucked up. So one of the things that happens is both Pulitzer and Hearst need big topics to sell the paper. So they need top-notch stories. So basically, they start in Cuba at the time, the Spanish were there, and Hearst started sending people to Cuba and started slandering the Spanish about how evil they were and all these fucked up things they were doing to Cuba, and started publishing all these stories, most of them not true at all. And
literally
started,
one of his journalists came back and said, there is no war here. Like it's all quiet on the Western front. Like literally said, it was all quiet. And he said,
yeah, his quote was, he sent a telegraph and said, everything is quiet. There is no trouble. There will be no war. I wish to return.
Right.
That was the telegraph that was sent to Hearst. And Hearst replied saying, please remain. You furnish the pictures and I'll furnish the war.
Yeah.
So, which is exactly what he did. And this is why when I was researching, I was like, how come I'm not finding this? Because basically he was the prime motivator for the Spanish-American War because he needed a war to sell his fucking newspapers.
Right.
So he started sending reporters to Cuba, started fucking smearing everything about the Spanish, got all the Americans whipped up and wanting to read all these crazy stories
about
Cuba.
Got whipped up into a frenzy.
He did. And then Pulitzer had to compete. So he started sending people to Cuba to report on the same story or else he's getting buried. So this war between Pulitzer and Hughes or Hearst makes him basically drives public policy to make the president go to fucking war, and they start the Spanish-American War in order to sell fucking newspapers.
Yeah,
the power of suggestion at work again.
I saw a lot of the stuff that historians say. They don't really think that Pulitzer and Hearst started the war necessarily, but they
instigated it. They didn't start it, they instigated it.
Yes,
the flames, the fire for the public outcry, for the justification to happen. Something like 9/11 happening for there to be, you know, the invasion of Iraq.
Right.
So people are like, yeah, man, America, same thing. They're like, yeah, man, fuck, that's fucked up. They're doing that to the Cubans.
Well, Brent, We all know it's an inside job.
It was an inside job.
Well, the Senate and the
Kim
president
Trolls brought the towers down.
The Senate and the the Senate and the president were
alien
both
chemtrails,
basically saying we're not going to war against the Spanish because of what's happening in Cuba. Right. Give me a fucking break. And they kept pushing it and they kept pushing it. Some of the stories that they did is there was a big story that got spread by Hearst that there was a woman who was trying to leave Cuba with the help of rebels, and that they got stopped. And this is like Victorian era, like super prudish, but they said that she got stopped and strip searched by the Spanish guards.
Right.
And everybody was aghast. But the truth came out from his own reporter that the male rebel who was escorting her got stopped and strip searched by the Spanish, and she was just not allowed to leave.
Yeah. I heard it was two in the pink and one in the stink.
That's probably what
it was
happened.
A real shocker.
But the big thing that pushed it was the USS Maine.
Brad's
not giving it up.
Brad's not.
I was almost going to laugh, but I'm not going to fucking do it. Not going to do it.
The USS Maine, which was like the pride of the American Navy at the turn of the century. It was the first warship that was designed by Americans, built by American shipyards. Up until then, it was like co-built by British or using British schemes or whatever. But it was like the pride of the U.S. Navy.
All the ships always took had bad
nine,
teeth.
Nine exactly took 9 years to build all this stuff, and the USS Maine ended up going down to Cuba. And when it was outside of Cuba, all that people know for sure is there were two huge explosions. The ship split in half and sank, and 250 U.S. sailors died when the USS Maine sank outside of Cuba.
That was the first false flag, man.
It was the first false flag, but it wasn't a government false flag. It was a fucking Hearst false flag. So
and he had the money and the resources to do it.
Right.
See,
he writes in the paper that if I can find it, it's pretty
like
crazy.
A torpedo
his story,
bomb.
Yeah, his story was that the Spanish planted a torpedo beneath the USS Maine and detonated it from shore in order to split it in half, and that ended up the sinking of the USS Maine was the final thing that pushed America. But again, it was because he was saying the Spanish intentionally sank the USS Maine. Yeah. The U.S. Navy, on behest of the president, researched it and immediately came back and said, no, we've been looking at the metal and everything. We think it hit a mine.
Right.
It wasn't some intentional thing that the Spanish did, but that never made it into the newspapers. Like, that's not going to cover it. And then ultimately, forensics later, when they looked at the ship, the current theory is that there was actually a coal room fire on the USS Maine that bled into the ammo area it blew up itself. Basically.
And everybody knows war equals money. You know what I mean? So you create a war and you create money. So it's in the president's best interest to go along with the story.
But even so, I mean, at that point, the entire public is behind it. Like the dirty Spanish blew up our ship, killed our boys. Like that was the moment that drove us.
I mean, they already
war.
Invaded Mexico and raped and murdered everybody.
Exactly.
I mean,
it sounds like a Toby Keith song, wouldn't it, man? If he was there, he would have wrote one for
That's
sure.
Right. So
there's a boot going in someone's ass, man.
The other thing is, so once it happens, once the war breaks out, Hearst charters like some big, huge yacht, fills it with offices, printing equipment, and a dark room for photos. And he himself gets on the boat with a bunch of reporters, and they start reporting live from Cuba in this floating office.
Geraldo Rivera there. Just fucking full-on mustache.
Yeah. So, but again, when I start to see flat out people saying this fucking guy was one of the main things that led to the Spanish-American War, and I'm having this heart, like, but there's a vacuum. There just wasn't information. And I was like, why is there not more information on this? This is fucking crazy.
Yeah. So what I'm realizing is I'm sitting here and realizing I'm a part of outing William Randolph Hearst as, starting the Spanish-American War. I think we're in trouble.
Maybe we are.
Yeah, this might be some of the most condensed information when we're done.
Yeah.
Minus 20 minutes. And my Toby Keith joke.
Right, an hour in, really. Yeah. I mean, real time.
Yeah.
But
so,
good thing you threw that joke in. Yeah. It'd be even shorter.
Yeah. But this ends up letting him win the newspaper war with Pulitzer.
Yeah, at some point he gets credit for one of the reporters saving that woman that we were talking about in Strip Search. So she publicly thanks his paper for saving them and shit. Right. And that's when Pulitzer's like, God damn it, fine. I'm going to break my morals. And he starts playing the game. You know, that's when he jumps in on the boat.
Right. How does the paper save her?
It was like that one of the journalists saved her. Yeah. One of the journalists. And he planned the thing from the beginning because he sees that's happening and he jumps on it. And like, there's some dramatizations on that one, that Geo documentary that I watched. And they apparently kind of planned that and orchestrated that whole thing.
Yeah. So a lot like of Rosa shit was planned there. Bullshit. And then he ends up winning the war for New York with the newspaper, ends up having the top newspaper in New York. And then from there, he starts to hit other markets. Then he acquires Chicago. Then he acquires Los Angeles. Then he acquires every big city until eventually over the years, he starts to own, like I said, one in four newspapers end up becoming owned by Hearst. He either starts them. He typically tends to buy failing newspapers in markets. And then he uses his resources to do the same exact pattern over and over and over again, have them kick everybody else's ass, and then that becomes the number one paper in the city. And then eventually you reach, which is the case in most cities, where there's just one paper.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, it's the same thing. Radio stations are the same way. You have you have fucking iHeartRadio.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere.
All the same fucking commercials. Yep. Play all the same shit.
Yeah.
I'm listening to the same shit they're listening to in Dallas if you're listening
to
it.
And that's the iHeartRadio is its own form of evil because they always do this thing and it's like, you know, listen now for your chance at $1 million.
Yeah.
It's like, little did we say that this is covering all of our markets and you really don't stand a chance to win.
Yeah.
Because you're like, fuck, there's not that many people in Bakersfield listening. I can, like, there's a really good chance. It's like, no bitch, that's for the world. Mm. Like, you're not going to fucking win.
They're in fucking Okataka, Japan.
Yeah, exactly. Listening. Yeah.
Ooh, iHeartRadio. Oh, $1 million.
Okatawa. Yeah. And then they get their flamethrowers.
They actually might get out of their trees. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, plus they need the wood pulp for newspapers.
Mm, that's true.
So at this point, he starts to use...
Could have been hemp pulp if it wasn't for Hearst.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure on that. I'm divided. But he starts to support, politicians. He starts to have his own, politics spread, and his newspaper was really read by the common person.
Yeah.
Like, it was a common person newspaper. And the reason that it all spread so well early on, the FFPs wanted to read what he was saying and he was saying things that they wanted to hear. But eventually he starts to kind of turn a corner and his politics change.
Well, he runs for governor of New York, mayor of New York, he runs for president, doesn't he? In like 1906 or something like that.
Yep. So, no, he ran for all those offices. And basically the fact that he was devoting so much of his time to the newspaper business and not much to his politics, everybody started to get pissed off, both voters and other politicians. And it's ultimately why he didn't win the election, because his heart wasn't in it.
He'd have enough influence that he could have smear campaigned the other guy, though. It's weird.
He might have. Think,
it was kind of weird that he didn't win. I can't imagine it happening today and him not winning.
Did you see what happened with the newsboy strike?
No, you said something about that.
And I don't know which war this happened after, if it was after the Spanish-American War. I think so, actually, though. But there was all those little, like, because what year was that? Where there's all those little newsy boys, like, extra, extra, I can read all about it.
In the same,
the same 20s. So what happens is during the war, they paid the kids extra or they charged the kids. That's what it is. They charged the kids extra because they were having such circulation. So those kids would run up. These are just like little fucking orphan Annie, like homeless little kids.
Right.
They're gangsters. Little kids, fucking those little newsy kids are badass. Like, the more I looked at it, it's super interesting. Those kids would run up to the newspaper distribution and they would buy a stack of papers with their own money at a discounted cost and then try to flip them, basically. So they get like 100 papers for 50 cents and then they'd have to go try to sell them. And if they didn't sell them, they didn't get a refund on what was left over. So it was on them to be smart about business and do it. Well, during the war, they raised the price to 60 cents for 100 paper, right? Just for example, to use a number.
Right.
And so they thought that after the war was over, the price was supposed to drop back down. But because Hearst and Pulitzer were having this battle. They were really struggling for profits, and they couldn't, Pulitzer couldn't cut it from employees because they might go over to Hearst, and there's all these like variables going on. So they're like, you know what? We'll just keep charging the little newsy kids 60
and
cents.
And they still have to go do it because that's how
they
make their
money.
Yeah.
These little fucking kids, they're like five, dude. They're like five to like
10, 11.
Yeah. Little kids, dude. These little badass kids. There's 5,000 of those little fuckers. They went on strike by themselves and shut fucking New York down.
Damn.
They quit. They threw the papers everywhere. Didn't fucking pay them. Quit distributing it. Their fucking circulation for both of the major papers. And it affected the world economy. Like it shut the newspaper down. Crazy. And these 5,000 little fucking kids went to the Brooklyn Bridge and fucking shut it down. Like Black Lives Matter status, and got in the middle of traffic and shut the Brooklyn Bridge down and protested until they came to an agreement with the newspaper companies. They didn't like win-win, but it's pretty fucking cool that a bunch of little kids took on the super fucking media moguls and like helped.
Actually, I did see something about that because I read one article and it was talking about the person who they think led the
kids,
strike,
like, organized them.
And all that it said was Lord that of the Flies. There weren't a whole lot of details, but they said that he wore white kids.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that makes sense. And he had a black hat, so.
Yeah.
It was just trippy to me. They started to have like leaders emerge among these children. Like, and I was like, man, they had to talk and like be like, do we want to accept these terms? Like, you know, little kids doing.
You
got to
think,
dude,
though, like at that time, like, and those kids are struggling. Like, they were adults already.
They were, dude. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, film of them and like pictures, and they're smoking fucking cigarettes, dude. Yeah. They're just sitting there smoking with these little newsy hats.
They're
and suits
hustling.
And shit.
They're hustling with adults because, you know, adults aren't wanting to pay them or whatever, right. You know. And
right. Dude, there's the most badass picture of these like 7-year-old kids with fucking suits on and little flat caps, smoking cigarettes, holding bundles of paper, just chilling next
that
to
the
building.
That should be the episode artwork.
I'll look at it. It's fucking like, damn, those kids are badass. So finally, though, they settle out after they bring the fucking newspapers to their knees for the most part, but they both need each other. They go ahead. They don't lower the price, but they offer them a refund on papers if they can't sell them. So they come to a compromise. They're going to pay the normal rate that they're paying right now, but if they can't sell the papers, because the newspaper's banking that you will sell the papers, it was always just like, we're not going to refund you, if you don't hustle. But now they said they have every reason to hustle, and they're probably going to sell the papers.
Oh, that strike was in 1899.
Yeah.
Damn.
So it's badass, though. That's a story on its own. It's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Those little kids are badasses. But crazy. So they fucking settle. And that's like before the unions and all that shit. These little kids fucking just pull that shit. It was really cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pictures are cool.
Yeah. The pictures of the kids are badass. Yeah.
With this, as he spreads, other things that, again, get tied into it. Like, there's a little bit of stuff out there about the fact that President McKinley was assassinated. There's a lot about that. President McKinley was assassinated by an anarchist in 1901, and people at the time blamed Hearst because he was, again, fueling fires. He was like stoking, he was pushing political buttons. He was polarizing people. He was doing all this shit to sell papers.
Right.
And a lot of people think that the climate he established is what made this guy fucking go Looney Tunes and go shoot the president. And they think that his media, his stuff was the main influence behind that.
Dude, media sways public opinion, and retractions are a lot less fucking, impactful.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can say someone was a fucking child molester and boom, like 7 days of that shit.
Yeah. And the next day,
we were wrong.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. The next day on the last page in the bottom corner, there's like, we'd like to retract the statement.
If all of a sudden we found out Jared was innocent,
it wouldn't matter. He's been innocent.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a child molester.
Exactly.
Dude, but did you know, I don't know if we talked about it. Did we talk about Walt Disney being a newsie?
No.
That's cool.
He was a newsie. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
There's pictures of him.
As was Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Which was kind of some of the criticism because apparently like that was your roots and like you're fucking going against these little kids and trying to
gouge them for prices.
Oh, and
Hearst was a fucking silver
rich
spoon.
Kid. Yeah.
Fucking,
it was obvious why Hearst was able to go and he had no sympathy for those kids.
Yeah.
But for Pulitzer, it was like a business tact and he had just become like hard and mean in his old age. You know what I mean? He had to do it.
And that's rare to get hard in your old age.
Mm, yeah, it is.
Like, so good for him.
They have pills for that.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
So he tries to get into politics just like his father did. He ends up spending $2 million on his run for presidency, which is fucking a lot of money. Like, I don't understand why he didn't win.
In the
tens? With that much money that he had.
In the 1910s?
Yeah.
Like, back in the day?
That's fucking crazy money.
Because the Illuminati was still there.
True.
They were like, this is not what we're going for. Kissing cousins were stopping him at every corner.
But yeah, so his political career gets shot down. And in the same, so that was in 1900. 1902, 1904, he keeps running for things. In 1903, he marries Millicent Wilson. Great name.
Maleficent. She had horns.
He marries Maleficent. She was a showgirl from New York City, and they think that she had connections to
the Russian
brothels
mob
in the city that were connected to politicians.
Yes. Allegedly, her mom ran like that brothel. Maleficent's mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Millicent.
So I'm saying Maleficent.
Where's Maleficent from?
You brought up Disney, and then he said Maleficent, and there's nothing I can do about it.
So they end up getting married. They have five sons together, like, et cetera. But the problem is, throughout this, is he ends up meeting in 1917 a Siegfried Follies showgirl named Marion Davies.
She's a comedian too.
Yeah. By 1919.
What were her jokes like, in 1919?
I have no idea.
Fucking weak sauce. Yeah. I can't come with a bad one. Like,
they were all bad.
I'm sure they were. Yeah. So he ends up falling for her. And by 1919, they're just openly living together in California. Like, he never divorces Maleficent, never anything like that. But he's just, everyone in the world knows that he and Marion Davies are just fucking kicking it.
Because he gave up on politics at that point is why.
Right.
Like, he tried the whole president thing, like Brad said, and tried to run for everything. And clearly you throw $2 million at it and control the media and you didn't fucking make it. He's like, screw it.
Right.
I'm having an affair.
Right. So, and one of the things, and again, like, one of the articles that I read did say this, and it said that basically what he did with Marion Davies showed what he did with everything, which was that he found her. She's a showgirl in New York. She's not a big actress. She's not famous. She's not anything.
Made her famous.
He basically starts putting her in all the papers as this amazing, super famous actress. And she becomes an amazing, super famous actress.
Right.
Like, he defines the reality of who she is. He says she's famous. He says she stars in big movies, even though she hasn't. But the entire nation is reading that she does. So she does.
I mean, that's kind of what the media does now.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the same thing. They put fucking.
That's what happened to us. We just told everybody we're cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And they still believe it. Yeah. I don't know why.
I mean, it works.
All three of us. Huge wieners.
Massive.
Yeah.
Giant stretch marks on your cheeks.
Yep. So he ends up redefining reality for her and gets her into movies, does all this stuff. Apparently she's not even that good of an actor, you know, but everything that I did read is that she was genuinely funny. Like, she was beautiful. She was funny. She was charming. Apparently she had a stutter, which would have been somewhat difficult for acting.
She worked it into her jokes.
But at the same time, like, this was pre-talkies.
Right.
So, like, when it was, still silent movies, it didn't matter if you had a fucking stutter. Yeah. But she ends up being the one who lives with him at Hearst Castle as he starts building the castle, which is in this same era. So in 1917, Hearst's mother, Phoebe, dies, leaves him the 168,000-acre ranch. And he ends up building it up into the castle, right? He spends $6.5 million on construction of it, you know, back in that era. It's a lot of fucking money to build a house.
$100 million.
And he spent $3.5 million on art. And even if you still go there to this day, like, there's just amazing art everywhere. Like, amazing.
After
fucking
the Depression
crazy
whatnot,
shit.
He sold off like 200,000 pieces of art, and they still had enough art left over to furnish the entire Hearst Castle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because basically, and again, this ties back to that.
They probably rotated the art. Like,
they probably
the walls,
did.
Like, it was stored, you know, somewhere.
But like, you get, and it wasn't just art. It's like, when you go, if you go on a tour of the castle, like, the person will just be like, oh, this half of the wall
made out of this
is
pirate
like,
ship.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, there's just like massive, like at one, you go to one point, there's a fountain which is like a fucking ancient Egyptian obelisk
that they disassembled and reassembled brought on a boat. Yeah, like all this tile on this wall came from this Italian fucking whatever, and they brought it down and reassembled it here just like it was.
I mean, just crazy. It's like
the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, it wasn't just I'm buying a piece of art that I can hang on a frame. I'm buying this fresco painted on a wall, and I'm shipping the fucking wall to my castle. And part of it was the architect, like, he would send her to Europe and he himself would go to Europe
find
and
they pieces. Would
just find it and buy it. If we can work it into the castle, we will.
Yeah, it's just fucking
pieces.
That's insane.
And even one, like, when you go in, like, the main hall is like he bought all these like crazy things from old churches, like these wooden walls used to be walls in churches, and they're like all set up. And apparently, like, one thing that I read was that the walls were designed for this thing where like choir boys could stand up, but it didn't look like they were standing up. So
no,
they
it's the opposite. They could sit down, but it still looked like they were standing up because they're not supposed to sit down.
Right.
So there were these weird chairs. I remember that's one of the rooms I remember. I remember there being an optical illusion room that made it look like it was way taller than it was because they've painted vertical lines. Yeah, vertical lines, and they taper in slightly. And it creates this illusion that the room is like fucking 30 feet high. And like this room's actually only like 12 feet high.
Right.
You're like, no. Right. There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
But it has to do with the way they painted it. And the altar boy room, there's these chairs that look like you're just standing, but you can like lean and kind of sit onto this thing. So it looks like you're standing at attention, but the clothing that they wore would disguise what they were standing on. So God wouldn't know.
Right.
Like you're tricking.
But the thing was though, like apparently this is the dining room in Hearst Castle. And the servants would do the same thing.
Right.
Because they'd have to be on their feet all day. Like there was a servant for each person at the table.
Right.
So they'd be standing there hovering, waiting for,
kinda
so
like
they
still
like even the servants in the Hearst Castle.
It's a taint rest. If you
I don't want an altar boy room in my castle.
No.
Like just,
that's a whole
bad
thing.
For looks.
Yeah.
Just accusations are going to start. Did you see Miriam Davies' alleged affair with Charlie Chaplin?
No.
So apparently, for one, Charlie Chaplin, when
he was
take
man.
Off the paint and the hat shit, that's a good looking dude.
He was a fucking player, dude.
Yeah, like, whoa, you're like, that's Charlie Chaplin? It was crazy. He's a really handsome guy. But and allegedly, he was a stud, like good and bad. All the ladies fucking loved him. But we just see him as this goofy fucking like Hitler mustache cane wearing fucking white face running around all fast. But allegedly, rumors started circulating that Miriam Davies, I almost said Hefner, Hearst's girlfriend, his mistress, is having an affair with Charlie Chaplin. So Hearst invites Chaplin and Davies and a couple other people, a guy named Thomas Entz
and
a few other people onto his yacht so that he can observe. Like this is there's a lot of alleged things so that he could observe Davies and Chaplin interact together and see what the body language is.
Right.
And so on one of the nights on the yacht, he goes to sleep and he wakes up in the middle of the night and Davies is not in bed next to him. So he gets up and apparently Hearst always carries a revolver of some sort with him.
Like
a gangster. He fucking has a revolver that he carries on his hip. So he fucking gets up and he gets to the galley. What's the galley? The fucking like the kitchen. Yeah. So he gets into the galley and it's dark and Miriam is there with who he thinks is Chaplin. And from the lighting that they can see, like they're way fucking too close. Like shit ain't cool. Like something
was
up.
Actually Hitler.
It was totally Hitler. No. He fucking just is pissed. He's like, he already went like that Chaplin's fucking Davies. Like he's already mad. He wakes up. She's not in bed. He goes in the kitchen and like, they're way too fucking close. Like something's up. Like they're kissing and close talking and he just fucking shoots allegedly. And it turns out it's not Chaplin. It's Thomas Entz. And allegedly this is the accusation is that he murdered Thomas Entz accidentally. Not accidentally, because he was close talking.
You don't murder someone accidentally.
He got up with his gun.
He was trying to kill who he thought was Chaplin.
And
so
shot.
The story goes is that when they went to port in San Diego and they pull off Thomas Entz, who was a really popular actor at the time, on a stretcher. And witnesses saw blood on the front of his shirt. And they said that he had grown ill and that he had an ulcer and something. And they fucking, that's the story that Hearst gave. And it was really quiet. Nothing came of it. Wasn't in the papers. It was kept tight. He's cremated 4 days later. And he's this big actor. And he dies on Hearst's yacht. And so that's the story. And then the other people say, oh, no. He had a really bad ulcer and it was like his birthday. It happened to be his birthday when he was on the yacht. So he celebrated. He's not supposed to drink alcohol or smoke cigars or eat the things he was eating. And he just said, fuck it. It's my birthday. Ate, drank, smoked, did all that. And he had a bleeding ulcer. And so they went to the nearest port and tried to get him medical attention. And that's what the blood is from, was from him like coughing up and choking up blood from his bleeding ulcer, and that he actually was transported elsewhere and died several days later in his bed, and that family saw him and met him and whatnot. So there's this he said, she said story
but again,
surrounding
I'm
Hearst killing this guy.
I don't want to fucking sound like a broken record, but the fact that I fucking looked at all this shit about Hearst, right, and I never fucking ran into that story.
There's an actual like...
Any other person that we've researched, even if there was no substance to that story would have shown up in every fucking biography, yeah, right, and every fucking article. And with Hearst, it's just not.
It hasn't weird the 1980 like unsolved mysteries show that tells the right story. So I don't know.
The one problem with that is though, is that if papers and whatnot did come out with these stories, like then they'll probably get like disregarded as some like bullshit,
right,
you know, fucking right, fantasy feeding papers, yeah, to where they won't make any money anymore. Yeah. And so like everybody's just like, nope, like we're just going to keep,
it's
you
just
know,
fucking crazy
straight and fucking do it right.
So yeah, so he ends up there at the castle, and he calls it La Cuesta Encantada.
No.
Which that sounds like a breakfast.
He shouldn't have done that hill. Starting the fucking Spanish-American War, you cocksucker.
That's him sticking his dick in your eye. Yeah. He's like, yeah.
I'll have the La Cuesta Encantada, please.
Yeah. Extra cilantro. Yeah.
Chalupas.
But there's the main building, which is Casa Grande. 38 bedrooms, 42 bathrooms, private theater, library, billiard room, guest houses, et cetera. There's the Casa del Monte, which is the house on the mountain, Casa del Sol. And then there's the Casa del Mar, which is the house of the sea. And I think those are the houses that I talked about earlier that the Hearst family still will stay in.
Did you talk about the Beverly Hills house? You said that already?
No, I didn't say anything about it.
All right, continue. I'm sorry.
Oh, go for it.
Well, he built a house in Beverly Hills, which is now like still the most expensive house in Beverly Hills or something. It was like,
I did see that. It's like fucking
$165 million dollars, but it went to market at 135, didn't sell for a few years. And then
nobody has that type of money.
It went for $95 million dollars, which is, that's crazy talk. Cause the huge house. Cause I think like,
what the Playboy Mansion go for? Like
not that. Yeah.
67 million or something.
Yeah. So
like
it finally sold in $93 million. An attorney of some sorts owned it since 1979. But that thing is so grandiose that once again has a private theater, like 29 bedrooms, a bunch of craziness, to the point that John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy spent a portion of their honeymoon in the Hearst house in Beverly Hills and watched their first film as a married couple at the Hearst house in the private theater.
Right.
So crazy talk.
That's well, the thing is, I mean, because
Kennedy definitely had the bucket of popcorn with the hole in it.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he would fly like massive people out. Winston Churchill, Howard Hughes, Charlie Chaplin, Gary Cooper, Errol Flynn, Clark Gable, Joan Crawford, Greta Garbo, Buster Keaton, like every A-list actor.
Just because
actor,
the art there, it was considered almost a museum.
It was.
Just being able to go there, you could see crazy art.
And if you got invited, Hearst would send a car for you, fly you on his own dime. Fucking a limo would drive you up to the castle. You had to pay for nothing, and you just had this amazing fucking time.
It's almost Hefner-esque. It's maybe more baller than Hefner, I guess. But
well, but the thing is, though, if that's what he was doing, if this is his lifestyle that he's like courting A-list stars and getting them to the house, etc., of course he's going to have a baller ass fucking mini castle in Los Angeles.
Right. Mini castle,
like because when you go back to L.A., you can't be the fucking slacker with a small house. You need to fucking represent there as well.
I already had a giant hungry hippo and you could sit on the paddles. Yeah. And it was like basketball size marble.
Hearst and Nicolas Cage spent a lot of time together.
They did.
That's how Nicolas Cage got famous actually.
But the thing is with the hungry hippos, he actually brought in tons of animals to the area.
Yeah. There were real hungry hippos.
Yeah.
There's zoo, on a chain.
Yeah.
The zoo he built there had grizzly bears, lions.
He fed them newsies.
Yeah, he did by the dozen.
Yeah.
Leopards, tigers, jaguars, cougars, chimpanzees, orangutans, monkeys, and elephants.
Were there bears?
Oh my. It's actually how
I tried to set you guys up for that.
It's how the newsies went extinct too. Yeah. He got all these animals.
There's too much.
Fed the newsies to him and it was over.
They also grew up.
There's only 5,000 of them.
Yeah.
Got them when they were older too.
Yeah, they were.
That's actually how Walt Disney died.
They're actually the population of the island of New Guinea is actually populated by newsies.
That's how Tupac gets his news.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And which is actually, you keep talking about things I'm about to mention. Like one of the things was Hearst would get his news.
It's about time I said it first.
Hearst would get his news like because he was in the newspaper business. He had to read his own newspapers, and he wanted to read all the competition's newspapers. And he would
never
have
done that job.
He had airplanes fly newspapers to him every day.
Crazy,
because there wasn't really a way for a Chicago newspaper to print in Los Angeles.
Morse code, letter at a time.
There were airplanes that would fly fucking newspapers to San Simeon every single day. So every day he had every newspaper that he wanted to read so he could see what was happening in the fucking news.
I saw a picture of one of the newsstands back then, and like when mass media had its birth, and it was like, holy shit, look at that newsstand. It was fucking like a mini store on the side of the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And it was just like, how do they even know what to pick? How do they know what they're going to buy? Right. Jesus Christ.
You think he would have came up with some way to distribute news all over the world?
Fucking, they didn't have internet.
No, I know that, but you think literally all Morris the money code. That he had, all well, the I mean, shit he had, he all the probably that he did. Had under
I
him.
Mean, because I know
he
that
could use
once
the Tesla portal,
once they
expensive.
Started, yeah, once they started to get the wire, they would wire information, and he was probably pretty prominent in establishing that technology. I can't imagine anybody but Hearst would have been the backers for those early news wires because they had to spread the word fucking all over the place.
But again, that wasn't part of any information that was out there. So
the corporate growth by the 1920s, like I said, one out of four Americans, I was wrong. The stat wasn't that one out of four newspapers was owned by Hearst. It was that one out of every four Americans read a Hearst newspaper.
You're fucking up.
Which I don't know if that makes it better or worse. But there were newspapers all over the place. He owned King Features Syndicate, International News Service, Cosmopolitan, Good Housekeeping, Harper's Bazaar. He created a motion picture company.
The O Network.
He was early in radio, the O Network. He created Oprah Winfrey. He cloned her from various world leaders to create the ultimate woman, kind of like Serpentor.
Someone tried to tell me that our podcast had declined because we do things like we just did right there, that false information where we just roll with like a fake fact that we made. Like we're obviously fucking being sarcastic.
How have we declined? We've actually,
that they were like,
we've been doing that since the beginning.
Yeah. So they're like, the thing you can't tell, like normal people don't know you're kidding. And I was like, what the fuck if they didn't know we're kidding? They didn't invent Oprah. Like obviously Hearst did not clone Oprah. Like, you guys presented so convincingly. I was if someone fucking buys that shit.
Yeah.
That was literally an argument I had, you know what I mean, with a good friend. I was like, that is not, I don't understand. There, but
the decline of our podcast.
No, that wasn't this decline of our podcast, but it was basically that them and another party had quit listening to the podcast because it used to be that you could listen and learn something. And now you're not quite sure what's real and what's not because we do that.
Well, we've said from the beginning that we're giving you this information, but if you're interested in it, probably go research it further.
Yeah. But specifically the fact that we roll with the fake that thing when we joke with each other and we go like, oh yeah, like the population of the island, New Guinea, like there's 5,000 newsies and that.
Wait a minute.
Fed them to lions.
Yeah. And the cloning of Oprah and the O Network.
On three different occasions, I've had people contact me about information we did on the podcast because like
they want to use it for papers.
Because they want to use it for graduate research. I'm like, no.
It's listed under comedy for a reason.
No.
You
fucks. And they're like, well, can you just tell me where you got that information? I was like, fucking Google.
Yeah, the internet.
Like, nothing scholarly that you should be using in your graduate paper. Yeah, I promise.
And I don't even know how many I've just said don't that I haven't forwarded to you, but that's a common question.
No, people want
someone said, I didn't study for my test. I'm just going to listen to your podcast on Tuesday. I was like, what?
Oh, no.
Don't do that.
That's all bad. They're like, nowhere in these answers, they're a dick.
Yeah. Like, they just drew a dick on the Scantron.
Some professor somewhere. So Gary Coleman led the newsie strike? Like, what the fuck
size
is
for
wrong
kids?
With this person?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's really funny. So
I guess there are gullible
weak jaws
people out
from
there.
Sucking dick.
I mean, it's sad you have to do a disclaimer, you know, about
if anything, your jaw should be strong.
All of our listeners' jaws should be strong.
Hearst becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. The company gets huge. And then the stock market crash fucks him just like it fucks everybody else. He has to start selling stuff off. He has to shut down the film company. The fact that the newspapers weren't self-sustained. He actually got like a government
mandate to do so.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't able to pay the dividends and debts that he was able to. He had a government mandate to restructure the company.
Right.
And they made him like close down the fucking company and change that shit. Yeah.
Of the 42 newspapers he had bought or established by 1940, only 17 were still there. Because again, they weren't financially viable.
Right.
They were operating often at a loss. And that couldn't work once the fucking stock market crash hit. That's when he had to sell off a shit ton of his art. And that's also when he kind of starts to lose it because his politics shift. And while I'm not a fucking historian, obviously, but a lot of this stuff was saying that when President Roosevelt took over, FDR was like for the people, right. Like working class people loved FDR, the New Deal, all the stuff that he stood for. And Hearst didn't like FDR and his policies. So his newspaper started to turn against FDR.
In the beginning, he was with him. But yeah. At some point in time,
he turned, and then the audience started to lose interest because they like FDR, this newspaper smearing FDR, the other newspapers aren't. And again, that starts to set the stage for where we are today. You get your political flavor of news and you ignore the truth.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I want the, you know, I either want the MSNBC version or the Fox version because I'm either left-leaning or right-leaning and you ignore. I want the shit
I agree with or
not. Right, exactly. So this was sort of the beginning of that. He starts to not really tell the truth about FDR because he doesn't like the policies.
See, and
the people turn away from it.
And I said that on the part that got deleted, and I think you said it better than I did, but that's exactly what I was talking about,
right.
how the news is swayed and, you know, the parts that are owned by this side are pushing this information.
Right. Which you know, who can tell, even if you are on this side and you decide, okay, I'll go, let me hear what the other side
apparently,
to say.
Apparently,
that might be the day they're embellishing some fucking right. shit and you don't fucking know. It's so hard to get accurate.
And people can't even decipher for what's real and not from our podcast.
Right.
It's going to be a real problem listening to news.
But the other loophole is, and it's worse today than it would have been in Hearst's time, but because there's so few people that own the entire mediascape. But so if you did read a paper and you were like, fuck, I can't believe this paper said all this shit about FDR, and you're in, you know, especially if it's like the 1940s, 50s, and you can get a cabled version of another newspaper.
Right.
If you buy another newspaper to try to see what they're saying, and their people are saying the same exact fucking thing, you don't know that they're both Hearst newspapers.
Right.
Like you don't
you're
know
just
that
getting
these
one wired in
right. And you
place,
suddenly
yeah.
feel like, wow, I read three different newspapers, or I read two newspapers and watched a fucking thing. You listened to a thing on the radio. I watched a cable news network. I read whatever. Like they're all the same source.
And that's,
like, that's what's
and I used this example before, but the best example of that dude is the Easter Bunny clip, the Rupert Murdoch like crazy Easter Bunny clip. Have you guys seen that?
No, I don't.
It's
think
all
so.
Well. The Easter Bunny's out this week, and then they show like
they
70
say the
news
same
stations.
Thing.
They're like, well,
the exact same wording,
and it's a bunch of reporters just obviously reading off of it,
right? Because it goes around the wire.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's because they wire in news.
They have the canned video. Yeah,
bullshit filler. That's all it is.
Yeah. And it goes. And the other thing is like, and we're getting away from Hearst and more modern day, but another thing is like, if you're a, like companies cash in on that. So news people will put together little, you know, here's the script, your people can read it. Here's the clip you'll play at this point. But then all of a sudden, like a drug company might make one and put it on the wire. So it's like, here's the script that you can use. Here's the free video you can play in the middle of it. It's just free content for you to fill three minutes and 58 seconds.
Yeah.
And there's a doctor saying, well, if you actually do have, you know, heart disease, one of the best things for you is to get a lot of exercise. And there's also a drug called such and such. And then like the whole thing was for that one mention of a drug.
Right.
And they'll fake a news story and put it on the wire just to get their it's like, you can't fucking tell anymore.
Yeah.
And this is before Trump talked about fake news. Fake news is fake news before Trump
and
got
you have
to
the
it.
Onion.
Like, it's fucked.
You have the Onion. You have all these fake
dude,
news networks.
People fall for the Onion
all
dude,
the time.
They're
dude.
Fucking well done though. Like they have because normally, like on a bullshit news story on
people
YouTube,
people that don't know what the Onion is will like share it on Facebook.
Yeah,
and you're like, dude,
are you trolling or fucking not? Do you really not
they
know?
Don't know what the Onion is?
But the problem is, like a fake news would be like, you know, kids doing it. And you're like, oh, obviously that kid's not a reporter. But the Onion has 45-year-old dudes doing the bit.
Yeah,
looks like the fucking guy, and you're like, man, that looks legit. It's just what they're saying is outrageous. Right. You know, they're not putting the gymnast down because they broke their ankle. You know, they're not euthanizing them. You know, like that's
like, China's cruel.
I remember that was one of my favorite Onion stories. It was the Olympic gold medalist. She broke her ankle, and they were her parents had decided to euthanize her, and the parents were in on the bit. Like the parents were in the video.
Right.
Yeah. And they were talking about how she had done well and you know they bred her for that purpose. And it was like a racehorse. Yeah,
she'll never be full potential.
It was hilarious. Like and they're 40, 50-year-old people doing these bits. Right. And you can't tell because they're so well
and
produced.
That's how you know that crisis actors are real too.
Right.
That's the truth. Yeah. Because they can
inside job. Yeah. I'm on board.
So this is part of the landscape that Hearst helps to create. I don't know if it was an inevitable conclusion of capitalism hitting news or if it was something that Hearst accelerated or wouldn't have existed without him. I think it would have happened no matter what.
I mean, it could go either way. You know what I mean? Like you start feeding people stuff and they start fiending for it.
Right.
It
and at the heart of it, wildfire. You still get journalists who want to tell the truth and want to. It's one of the reasons I really love Vice because they can fucking send reporters out and into interesting things and do whatever and they don't fucking care. Like, but this is part of what Hearst did. And again, once the empire started to collapse is when Orson Welles released Citizen Kane, which was basically just a
veiled... Which they were even able to hold that Citizen way Kane. Back. They super restricted
they the release almost showing killed of that. Yeah. They almost completely killed Citizen Kane. He was trying to buy every copy that was out there. Hearst was trying to bury it because it was so obviously about Hearst, you know, and his rise and fall, and his mistress and fucking everything.
What was it called? Citizen Kane, Empire Strikes Back? Is that what it was?
No, Citizen Kane 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was wondering.
Yeah. Basically just the sheer fucking grit and willpower of Orson Welles is the only reason the film finally made it. Because the studio was ready to buckle. Everybody was ready to fucking just, you know, concede to Hearst. And Welles just kept insisting, no, this move, like the movie's happening, like, and just kept proceeding. The empire starts to recede. He ends up spending the last...
Did you say empire because he said empire? Or
no, he had already said empire.
Okay, sorry.
The empire starts to recede, and the last 10 years of his life, he lives in Los Angeles. He lives in his mansion in Beverly Hills. All that I read was that he died in Beverly Hills at the age of 88 in 1951, but I didn't actually read how he died.
He died.
Are you guys just dragging this out?
No. He was at the San Simeon estate and to seek medical care, which was unavailable at his remote location. And he ended up dying in Beverly Hills. I don't think it says actually anywhere.
Again, we're foiled on the information.
It says he died on his yacht at age 88.
No, I didn't see that. Autoerotic asphyxiation is what I saw. Yeah.
Regardless, he's fucking dead. And the will, like, kind of a weird move for him, but his will said that his children only get a very small percentage of the estate and of the money, and that the company, I guess it isn't a strange
the
move,
company pays him $450 million a year.
But that's split between a lot of people. Like it's split between
Between 450 people, it's still $1 million a year.
That's true. It's split between like 55 grandchildren or something
even
like
better.
That. But at its low point, it was something like $160,000 a year. But his grandson, William Hearst III, apparently just completely fucking revitalized the entire company in the last couple of decades.
I thought about that a lot because he had five kids and he named one of them William.
Right.
So that was William Jr. So maybe that William, that's his son.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that has to be a weird thing for the kids. Like that you have to be daddy's favorite, but you don't know at that point. It's just a baby.
No.
You don't know which one's going to be your favorite.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them, the first son is named after the father.
Right. It was the third son.
Well, that was his legit. That was the son he liked.
His first, second, fourth, and fifth son were all named George Foreman.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he had Mike Tyson. Yeah.
That was his daughter.
Yeah. Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah. But he ends up basically not letting his kids just take over the empire.
Right.
He leaves it in the hands of capable news people and managers because he's more interested in it surviving as a media empire than he is a family dynasty. And apparently there's just been endless fucking lawsuits, like the children and the grandchildren trying to fucking get more control, but everything was just fucking locked down.
Greedy fucks.
From the beginning. And then basically his grandson, who's now the CEO of the company, did it because he fucking earned it. Like he, because they ended up, I mean, they all still have the ability to be on the board and to do whatever, but he obviously proved to a board of investors and directors, he knows what he's fucking doing. His investments are savvy. You know, he leads the company. Right. He himself is worth $3 billion. The company's still a major media player. And most of it's because of him, because before he got there, it was really a declining media empire, but he started investing in cable television. All
same
this
legacy as
stuff.
His dad. Now he's in the modern age.
Right, basically.
Grandpa.
So, yeah, his grandpa. Yeah, his grandpa. Yeah. His dad was grandpa. A fuckface. Yeah. So, yeah, that's Hearst. And again, the weirdest take on it to me was the fucking strangeness of not being able to find shit.
Hey, you mentioned that. Are you sad about that? Can't this guy be just a good guy? He's not.
Nope, he's not.
I'm just saying.
Okay. That's all I got.
And once again, not just bad information, just any information. Like, it's really just fucking, yeah, there should be more by
documentary. It was just like his death. Like, oh no, he just died. He left the San Simeon home to seek medical attention and died in Beverly Hills.
Yeah. Okay. What? All right.
Of what?
Weird. Weird. Yeah. Anyway, so that's first.
I guess if you own the media, though, you can put in there what you want.
Yep.
All right. Chicago. So we're having a meetup in Chicago. If you don't know, blows my mind sometimes. Yeah. December 9th.
2 p.m. to 5 p.m. and beyond.
That is correct.
Yes.
At the House of Blues in Chicago.
Let's do 2 p.m. till late. Let's do that.
Well, officially till 5 p.m. I don't know what happens. Once that late. Room, I haven't
5
seen
p.m. is late for Dave. Yeah. Okay. Because I'm bringing him a panda head, like costume
a
head.
Sad one.
Yeah. It's a sad panda head. And when Dave is ready to check out, he can still be there. He's just going to put the panda head on.
That works.
I'm just going to go sleep. So yeah, I don't know what the layout will be, but at 5 p.m. it's officially over, but obviously we could probably
it's
mosey
free to
out
come.
Of that room into the
it's
bar.
Free.
Yeah.
Come. I mean, you're right. Buying your own drinks. Like we're not paying for your drinks. You're paying for ours.
No, I think we're probably doing the macaroni and the drinks again, right?
I think that's probably happening and there will probably be a raffle, I would assume. I'm fucking have to like mail prizes to there or something. I do not want to try to carry all that shit on a plane.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Maybe I can ship it to the House of Blues or something cool. I'll ask Techo. Yeah, maybe I can
ship it there.
So that's that.
You can actually ship it to the hotel.
There's an event on Facebook. So go say you're going if you're going. So we can kind of plan for that. And you got plenty of time. Flights are pretty cheap if you're in California, which is crazy. So I don't know what they are from other places.
If I fly
really
out to Chicago, it's 2 degrees there and nobody shows up, I'm quitting this fucking podcast.
No, right now.
Fucking quitting.
Not so, counting like our crew of like, you know, I think like we're coming like
75 people deep.
I think we're coming 7 deep or something like with our crew. And there's some more Bakersfield people, dude. Like I heard Jake Blair, Ben Cooper, like people from Bakersfield. There's like, I'm going, dude. The ticket's only $150. Like we have some friends that say they're going and want to like get in on our tickets and our flights and try to all go together.
Yeah.
And then there's like 20 something committed on the thing so far. And then Techo's bringing, you know, 3 or 4 people come from Techo. So I don't know. It's up to 30 something already. So that
it should be
fun already.
It'll be cool.
So go check that out. If you could, you know, even if you don't love us enough to fly all the way and see us, like Brad said, make a trip of it. It's Chicago.
And if you're a dude
pizza and a hot dog, get shot. There's all kinds of shit you could do.
Yeah, if you're a dude,
stolen.
Yeah.
If you're a dude, a lot of our fans are a bunch of big ass whores, so they'll be there. And if you're a whore, there's gonna be some dudes there.
You're gonna be whores.
Yeah. Just saying.
On that note, thanks to El Yucateco Hot Sauce, our primary sponsor. They are available at most major grocery stores. You can get them at Walmart. You can get them on Amazon.com. You can find that shit on eBay in giant, bulky ass pump fucking 64 ounce containers and shit if you're real crazy. And they have a little mini hard to get bottles. Also, you can go to El Yucateco.com. They have a gear store. You can buy t-shirts and all kinds of fun stuff that has El Yucateco logoed across it. You can also get it at mexgrocer.co.uk if you're outside the United States. Thank you to printdirtcheap.com. You can use code SOFAKING to order sticky stuff from them and printed things from them. Thank you.
Or letterheads.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah. Printed stuff. That covered that.
Printed goods.
Yeah, printed goods or sticky stuff. That covers it all.
You said sticky stuff and sticky stuff.
It's recorded, sir. It's on tape, if you will. If you have a walkman, you can listen to it. Oh, you son of a bitch. I don't know. Who's recording and missed 20 something minutes?
That
bitch.
Your computer?
No, blame me. You don't even have a computer here. Only computer you got. Where was I at? Thank you to DeLeon Graphics for our silkscreen goods, t-shirts, and koozies and whatnot are available at sofakingpodcast.com/shop. So if you want merch, I'm still putting googly eyes in all those packages. I've sent a shit ton of googly eyes. I need to see some El Yucateco and other things looking back at me. Post some pictures if you got googly eyes on some funny things. Also, thank you to Digital Creations for our heat pressed goods. They make our coffee mugs, which are also available at sofakingpodcast.com/shop. And thank you to Dan Camarillo Jiu Jitsu. You can log into armhunter.com and buy instructional DVDs and goods. And if you're in Bakersfield, he does have an academy, if you will. And it's a good place. There's a huge turnout. It's a lot of people. I'd be nervous to go now. Go back and get my fucking leg ripped off. There's like 60 dudes on the mat last time he posted.
It's too much.
That's a lot. It's fucking me up, man. Rolling into people. But he like made
I'm claustrophobic.
Yeah. Glostrophobic.
Toxtrophobic.
Toxtrophobic. So also, if you like the podcast, we have a Patreon at Sofa King Podcast. No, at patreon.com/SofaKingPodcast. And you can donate anything from $1 on up, whatever you want to do. If you like us, support us. We appreciate it. It makes it a lot easier to do this work.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. You're going to say something, Brad. No. I saw your finger up. Changed your mind. I filled your mouth with professant words.
Ooh.
We have been getting creative and giving cool shout outs in the form of song a few times ago. And we did a little short story. And this time there's a skit. It's coming up at the end of this Thursday's.
Yesterday. You keep fucking that up.
I am fucking that up.
People know. You don't even need to say anything.
All right. It's Friday. It came out yesterday. If you like that shit you heard yesterday.
If you haven't listened to the Q&A,
yeah.
Listen to it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Or yeah. Don't.
And someone was like, someone had the audacity to use a technical audio term to say that they think we might be running out of material. Given that we started doing these question and answer episodes, bitch, that's extra shit on top of our normal shit. That's 3 episodes a week.
Running out of material. There's the world.
Yeah. What are you
there's
thinking?
The internet and we can make up shit.
Not running out of topics.
We can make up shit. And apparently
we gave you more bitches. That's what happened. Yeah,
apparently nobody would know if we just made up shit. We could just come in here and make up stuff and say funny things and nobody would know the difference.
I'm glad we recorded the other episode and released it yesterday. Cause remember when Brad was talking about, his superpower of being naked in the woods.
Yeah.
That was fucking
that
funny.
Was interesting.
That was great.
I hope we remember that happened.
Yeah.
So thank you though, seriously, to all of our patrons. Thank you to everyone that listens. But thank you to our patrons. We really do appreciate it. Brad had filet mignon earlier this week because of it. I'm still eating Top Ramen and just trying to pay my bills. And, but we do appreciate your support. It is a ton of work. And,
I don't eat peasant meat, Brent.
Oh, I do.
Fucking if I can catch flame
them.
Broiled.
If I can catch those fuckers, I get them, man. Yep. Try to spy on me in like the bushes. I'll get you over there. No, I meant like peasants, like our fans.
Yeah.
Like
fuck, I do peasants. That.
Yeah.
I'll eat the shit out of some human.
Anyways, that's all I got, I think.
All right.
All right. Well, with that being said, don't be a retard.
Vocabulary too. I'm a history of this edition. It's all brand new. You're through. I'm interplanetarian like Doctor Who. So who? Wanna get tripped on? Word is born. I'm kicking rhymes to the AM vote just wrong. Now Quincy, but I'm back on the block and not selling crack. I'm coming in with the fat funk flows and tracks. So what you saying, Black? With all that yakety yak. My artifacts can't be beat with bats. I'm saying, I eat everything up on the menu and bend you and send you swaying to be continued. The most beautiful thing in this world is just like that.
I get it, yeah.
The most beautiful thing in this world is just like that.
I get it, yeah.
The most beautiful thing in this world is just like that.
I get it, yeah.
The most beautiful thing in this world is just like that.
I get it, yeah.
Spurring a moment, opponents are suspects. Caught up in the resuscitation, rain and the text. Leaks, I speak my concepts freak. The itch me, sun cheek, funk figures of speech. Now that shit is in the open, I'm open, token, scoping. Waiting for the next nigga to get open on and break them down like an organic compound. That's the way of the world as the earth goes round. Now, how the fuck you sound?
I represent my clique like a faux pound. You better pack your levodopa medication from the shaking meditation from the earthquake and shit that we be making. Never faking, I get down for my crown clown. Shaking the membrane of Encyclopedia Brown. Freaking the funk in any throwdown. Why you sustain the sound of it? But the most beautiful thing in this world is just like that. Vote for me and sit your ass down. Now when I'm on the microphone, I roam through zones. But don't be trying this shit at home. No matter what race, creed, color, help my heart. I come sweeter than J-Rule and damage your amateur. As chronicle facial disorders occur, I'll assassinate your character's caliber. I channel my anger from the double-edged banger and turn it to the microphone strangler. So stop trying to see where your eyes can follow. Say goodnight to the world and goodbye to tomorrow. You're raving cuss, so it's a must you get bust. But not to be fucked with, toys ain't us. For eternity, through infinity, I internally get in ya. The most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that. I get in ya. The most